Hello and welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selina Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pavitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside. This is Selina speaking, and I am here today with a special guest, Helen Johnson.
Hi, Helen.
Thank you for joining me. So Helen is a criminologist and an expert in goddess archetypes. And goddess archetypes are absolutely fascinating. I think when you first hear it, you can sometimes think it's a bit woo-woo and you're not really sure what it's about. But actually, it's really deeply based in a sort of strong psychology, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So will you start off by telling us a little bit about goddess archetypes, where it's all from, and how we can use them in our day-to-day?
Okay, so I guess I always think there's two ways to think about them. There's the kind of where it comes from is in psychology. So it's Jungian psychology. And so it's about our collective, I guess, ways of thinking and our collective psychology. And it's based on Greek mythology, which has like a really deep place in our society and kind of has really shaped our culture and the way we think. So it becomes part of our, these stories kind of become part of our psychology. Mm. And they're also great metaphors for the different aspects of our lives and the different journeys that we take.
Mm.
And then you can also think of it more kind of spiritually as a way of really tapping into the fullness of our energy, our feminine energy, and the different aspects of our feminine energy. So it's a much richer, deeper way of thinking about kind of femininity than we might be used to, you know. So it gives us much more access and a well-rounded way of understanding our lives as women. So the whole point of the goddess archetypes is that if you kind of balance and heal and expand all of those goddess energies, then the kind of whole of your femininity is more expansive and where it should be. Yes, it gives you more power. So yeah, one's more academic and one's more kind of spiritual way of looking at it, whatever you prefer.
So if people visit your website, and I will add a link, they can do the goddess test to find out what kind of goddess they are as a starting point, right?
Yeah, because we all have like probably one or two that we lean towards.
Okay.
And one or two that we lean away from.
Right. So once we kind of understand what goddess archetype we might be, how can we then use that to help us find balance or navigate our way through life? So mine is, what am I again? Athena.
You're a sort of thriving Persephone with it more Athena focus now.
So what does that, yeah, exactly. So, okay, so what does that mean in practical terms?
So I guess Athena types are the types that will tend to be too heady, so they have to draw from other sort of different energies, more Artemis energy, getting out into nature, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Persephone types tend to be the kind of people that draw in other people's emotions like a sponge.
Yeah.
And so they have to learn when to kind of allow that and when to not, and how to help themselves to kind of protect themselves more in certain ways because of their deep sensitivity.
Yeah, which is actually really interesting. You say I'm a thriving Persephone because I remember about 10 years ago when I very much could identify myself with the Persephone personality.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite a hard stage in my life. But now I feel like I really know how to balance that out, that, you know, absorbing people's emotions but without depleting my own energy. So that's interesting you say I'm a thriving Persephone. Definitely nowadays but identify with the Athena, like warrior woman, come on, you know, where's the cause, let's fight it. And actually, since you told me about needing Artemis, the goddess of nature, it's really stayed in my mind as going, anytime I'm feeling stressed out or overwhelmed or that I'm about to burn out, it's like, right, find water, trees, grass, anything, you know, nature, and immerse myself in that. And it really works, this is why I find goddess archetypes so fascinating, because I find them actually such a practical tool and such an interesting, refreshing way of looking at ourselves individually, but also looking of the role of women in society. So
I think we do talk about women in quite a tired, old way now. Even when we talk about the empowerment of women, obviously there's lots going on that's kind of really interesting, but sometimes we can get stuck in like old concepts and we're using the same kind of dichotomies, let's say, like the same, we're saying it's got to be this or that, or, you know, we're using the same arguments or the same, and it just gives a whole new access to like a new perspective that's a lot kind of deeper and richer, I think.
Yeah.
And much more practical, yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to actually be doing a Project Love Salon all about goddess archetypes on the 21st of November, which I cannot wait for, and I can't wait for people to really learn about what goddess archetypes can tell them about the way they love and the way they live and how to kind of find that balance and use it as a really practical tool. So I don't want to be covering all the same stuff you're going to cover in that. I don't want any spoilers. So we'll leave that for the people who are coming to that. But also, but what I'd like to talk about today then, something I find absolutely fascinating that I've heard you touch on before, is looking at the goddesses Aphrodite and Demeter. So Aphrodite being the goddess that represents love and sexuality in our society, or that aspect of women and beauty, and Demeter, who represents the mother in all the different ways we can play the role of mother. And what you've said to me is that those are the two goddesses that are in crisis in our society, and I think that is such a fascinating one to explore. So talk to me, you might want to do both together, or let's start with Aphrodite, and tell me how you see Aphrodite as in crisis in our society.
I think, for both of them, as a kind of introduction to that idea, is that those both of those energies represent the more traditional roles of women, or the kind of things that traditionally we've been told women are good for, right? So Aphrodite is about beauty, and she's about sensuality, and she's about sexuality.
Yeah.
So it's been morphed into this, you know, our Aphrodite kind of images and representations in society, and the way we talk about that kind of energy has been morphed into an obsession with like how women look and sex, right? As it, but their sexual objectification.
Yeah.
And the same with Demeter is that that's the mothering, nurturing role. And so that's the other role that's kind of been overemphasized in women.
Yeah.
So as when you then brought feminism in and our consciousness has all been raised, and then we've started learning actually women can be other things too. But the problem is that then that has completely complicated our relationship with those goddesses.
Yeah. So what does that look like in kind of real terms? How do you see it in people, for example? Let's start with Aphrodite. So people who are really being affected by that crisis of Aphrodite, how is it showing up perhaps in the dating world, or perhaps people in their relationships?
It comes out in like really mixed messages, I think, about anything to do with Aphrodite energy. So about beauty, our sensuality.
And there is also that kind of fixation on image.
Exactly. And it's the same thing. It's like, be beautiful, but don't be too obsessed with being beautiful, because then you're shamed for being vain.
Yeah.
But also do everything right around your beauty. Definitely don't like...
And a certain kind of beauty. And this was my struggle for a while, is that in order to be attracted to men, I thought I had to look a certain way that either I didn't think I did look that way, that I couldn't look that way, or maybe if I really made an effort, I could, but I didn't want to be that woman.
No.
So therefore, I was actually completely rejecting Aphrodite, but throwing baby out with the bathwater. So I was rejecting what I thought was kind of that loving, sensual woman, but actually what I was rejecting was the one that was being given to me by society, saying you have to look this way, like, you know, a model with massive boobs and perfect hair.
Because the only kind of real Aphrodite imagery that we have, or, you know, kind of, let's say the personification of Aphrodite in our society is really through your like famous Hollywood type starlet types, or through in a really extreme way your kind of hyper sexualized imagery of women and things like that, like your kind of Instagram woman that we have in this day and age. And also that's also unfortunately being expanded to men as well, who have those same pressures, and they're very, and it's very, very much about the gaze upon you and your beauty out there in the world, which is thought of as being dangerous, possibly corrupting, but also necessary. So it's really, really confusing, you know.
Yeah.
And what's actually missed out of it, and you're right, it's a very particular like standard, and then it becomes diminished, because it's like, it's that classic thing of like, if you look a certain way, will I be respected? You know, we have those kind of thoughts. But if I don't look a certain way, will I be respected? You know?
Yeah.
And actually, we then become, and I was thinking about Naomi Wolf's book, The Beauty Myth, as well.
Yeah.
Which is that actually it's a really clever way of tricking women into distracting them by attacking their self-esteem so that they don't actually look at, like, the real power imbalances that are out there in society, that their minds are filled with anxieties that are basically meaningless when they're not actually fully stepping into their power. And I think what happens is that with both of those things, sex and beauty, is that we miss the total point, because the whole point of your Aphrodite energy, especially within you, is to experience that, is your senses, is your five senses.
It's not about everyone out there. It's not about attracting the world out there, even being concerned with whether they're loving you or thinking you're beautiful. It's about how you're feeling in here.
Exactly.
Which is what Project Love is so much about, which is why I love that so much. Yeah. It's just like, yes, we're helping to create this empowered version of Aphrodite. So what does the empowered version of Aphrodite look like? How does she behave with and respond to love, and how does she see it?
Well, the kind of empowered Aphrodite is basically that woman that is really deeply connected to beauty and to heart energy, you know. So, and that's where, exactly, and then as soon as you say that, it just feels lovely, doesn't it?
It's just like, oh yes.
And yet when we think about, you know, beauty, we can start to like denigrate it or think that we shouldn't be looking at that because, you know, we're very confused about it. But if you think about being connected to beauty, channeling like loving and beautiful energy,
experiencing beauty rather than trying to project it.
Exactly. And the same with the sex thing. She is the goddess of sensuality and sexuality, but actually that's about female sexuality, right? So it's actually not about male experience of you, like sex or your sexual availability or your not sexual availability. It's to do with connecting to your sensuality, right? Inclusive of your sexuality, really connecting deeply to pleasure. And which is also lovely. But we have this idea that pleasure is almost like dirty or dangerous. If you think about food, we're told, you know, it's sort of like we have this idea that deprivation of pleasure is the best thing to do around food. And we're almost ashamed for being greedy and enjoying our food.
I would say also, I mean, I think I would sometimes be guilty of seeing it as a bit frivolous. There's a part of me, not the happy, healthy part, the less happy and healthy part of me that probably, certainly at some point in the past, and therefore a bit, a bit self-indulgent, a bit frivolous, rather than actually recognising the importance of it and the power of it.
And I think, like, that's the thing, is it's this indulgence thing, and it's so, we've got it so wrong, because actually, if you really connected to pleasure, it's the same even with sex, right? Like, if you think about your own pleasure, we have this idea that you're giving it away and somehow that would, like, shame you, or that it's really dangerous because you'll get hurt, you know, and you won't have, like, a respectful relationship or whatever. You know, all of these things that we get about being too lustful, let's say. But actually the reality is, this with food, with sex, and with whatever it is to the five senses, that actually if you genuinely really deeply connect with pleasure, you're not going to be having sexual relationships that are unhealthy for you. Because I know in my experience that when I'm in a sexual relationship or encounter that's not healthy for me, I'm not actually getting pleasure out of it. You know, that if you trust your really deep connection to your pleasure, your body will, like, tell you. And the same with food. Like, if you're actually bothering to really, really enjoy what you're eating and really, like, you're not going to be overeating.
No.
You're going to be eating, like, in a balanced way. You might eat something kind of quote unquote bad for you. But
you won't overdo it, because that wouldn't be pleasure anymore. Exactly. That would actually be, it would, you know, if you eat...
Yeah, you feel awful.
As we've all experienced, if you eat too much cake, you're going to feel sick.
Yeah, yeah.
So at that point, the pleasure ends.
Exactly. Your body will be, like, your actual experience, like, if you're so down, which I'm really personally actually trying to cultivate this in my life at the moment. And it's really funny because it's so counterintuitive and it's really hard to remember. It's so weird. But every time when I don't do that, I think, well, why did I bother just eating that way? Because I wasn't even enjoying it. It's like totally true.
Yeah.
And if you do slow down and you're just, in fact, you'll stop enjoying it once your body like doesn't think it's right for you, it will stop it.
Yeah.
So getting into your pleasure and that includes the experience of beauty.
Yeah.
And then connecting to like what makes you feel joyful in your heart. That is Aphrodite energy.
Oh. I know. And you know what? You said something to me the other day about Aphrodite that, or rather about pleasure and actually using your pleasure and getting into your pleasure so that that becomes
your guide.
Yeah. And it made so much sense because, like you say, if your top agenda is pleasure, sexual pleasure, for example, you're not going to you're not going to want to be with someone who makes you feel, doesn't treat you well, makes you feel a bit shit, because you're not going to experience pleasure. So therefore it's just like, no, because my aim here is pleasure. And likewise with food, you're not actually going to eat the whole cake because that isn't pleasurable, but you might eat little slice. So it kind of makes sense that actually there's an amazing, you sort of think you get too much into pleasure, you're sort of, you could get sort of overindulgent and perhaps, get carried away. But actually the pleasure stops when you get carried away anyway.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
If you stop listening to your body, then you're not actually experiencing the pleasure anyway.
Exactly. And I do think that like really connecting to pleasure does actually put us on the right path and not the wrong path.
I love it. Okay, so if people want to connect more with their Aphrodite energy, and this, and it's interesting as well, I will just say that I think, you know, where I used to come from and that idea, I actually rejected Aphrodite altogether and just was like, I don't want to be that kind of person. I didn't necessarily feel like a particularly sensual person. I didn't feel soft and feminine. That's something I kind of, you know, was part of my journey to of my get ready for love journey, actually, was connecting with that side of me. But so what would you say for people who perhaps are struggling a bit with their Aphrodite side? How do you bring that balance into balance?
Actually, just speaking to you now, I thought one of the best ways, especially if it is around kind of anxieties around beauty and things like that, is to start looking around you and actually trying to find the beauty in others. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
Rather than getting anxious about your own beauty, just actually focus on what's around you.
Because you'll notice, like, that you'll meet someone who's not conventionally feminine or attractive, but that has, like, this sensuality or this heart energy, and you just think, God, they're really... You know, they have so much beauty, like, in them. And so...
You start to challenge your perceptions of what beauty is and start to realise that what you've been measuring yourself up against is probably that kind of, you know, what the media and Hollywood films have told you is beautiful. And actually, beauty comes in all shapes and sizes and in all kind of guises. And that's the thing to remember and to focus in on that. Oh, I love that.
So, looking for the beauty in others, and you'll notice, like, where you go. And I think that starts to just tell your brain, wait a minute... This challenges your thinking around how you treat yourself. And then the other thing to do is, especially around broken hearts and sort of the Aphrodite wounds and all is that five senses pleasure type thing, actually, and play.
That's good homework.
Yeah, exactly. So literally, like, list the five senses and actually, like, delight all five of them in some way. That's a really lovely kind of healing thing to do if you are, because Aphrodite's wound is often around being kind of brokenhearted, because she gives her heart away very easily, you know, and can become disappointed. So that's, if you are having that kind of a wound, it is a really great place to start. Is to get into your sensuality and just your, like, experience of that, because it is a really, like, loving energy, and it will help you to find those little nooks and crannies of you know, heart energy within you again when you're feeling like tea.
Yeah. I wonder as well if it would, that must also work if you are in a relationship and you're feeling things sort of not quite, feeling the love and that, you know, the sexiness anymore. And, you know, what we always say is actually if you're starting to look at your relationship and not be that satisfied with it, look first at your own self-care and your own relationship with yourself. So I would imagine also doing that and going, rather than sitting down with your partner, come on, we've got to, you know, make this, what's going on, is actually, hang on, why don't you go and indulge yourself in your senses and go on a bit of a pleasure journey and actually see how that awakens you and that side of you and see what happens then in that space of your relationship.
The other really important thing to note is to learn the difference between pleasure and compulsion to distract yourself, right? Because what we can do is think that we're enjoying ourselves when in fact we're not enjoying ourselves, we're just trying to get out of ourselves.
Yes. So I've definitely seen that in people. Well, I'm sure I've done that. I mean, I've definitely also done it myself. Yeah. Oh, I've seen other people do that.
Yeah, I know. I'm just thinking,
I mean, who doesn't from time to time do that? You know, we're all going to be doing, you know, getting out of balance in all these areas at some point.
So just asking yourself that question, is this pleasure or is this distraction? And you don't even have to do anything about it, because I, you know, you don't have to force your consciousness into any way, or just to ask the question of yourself.
And I would say it's interesting, because when you were talking about, you know, Aphrodite in crisis and then the empowered Aphrodite, the energy that comes with Aphrodite in crisis, there is a real anxiety around it. And so I, for me, my way of measuring whether this is pleasurable and enjoyable and good for me, or whether it's actually distraction, is that there would be a sense of emptiness but also a bit of an anxiety around the thing I was doing, which I thought was fun, but actually is probably more an escape and a bit of a distraction. So it's tuning into yourself as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you can't really get very far until you do tune into yourself.
Exactly. Okay, so, I mean, we could keep talking about Aphrodite, but let's move on to Demeter, because this one, when you told me about Demeter being in crisis, it kind of just blew my mind, because as a new mother at the time when you were telling me about it, the way I kind of, what I took away from it was that, yes, the role of Demeter, of course, is to nurture and nourish and look after the needs of people. But as much as she does that for others, she also does it in equal measure for herself. And that is where I see that mothers in our society are not given that message. We are told that the good mother looks entirely after the needs of others and nourishes and nurtures others and almost doesn't need anything for herself, just like fulfilling others, that should be enough for her. And actually, of course, if you try and do that, you'll be burnt out, stressed out, on a short fuse and pretty miserable. And so actually recognizing, no, as a mother, I have to look after myself even more than I did before, and certainly in equal measure to the way I'm looking after, you know, my child and my family and my partner and everyone. And I know also that it's not just about whether you have kids or not. It's also not being a martyr, not sacrificing yourself to work, which is also something I have to constantly remind myself of, because I love my work so much, just as I love my child so much. So it's almost easy to go, I'll give everything I have to you. And it's just like, that is not going to work, because you're going to have a meltdown and you're going to have and burn out. So,
and then you're no good to anyone, are you?
Exactly.
And I think what's interesting about the whole Demeter energy is exactly that actually this is about care and nurturing, really. And we're told that a good person sort of like a good woman cares and nurtures for others, and we're told that that should be at your own expense, otherwise it's selfish, right? And what happens when you have a child, I think, is that it's the demands, the energetic demands on you are greater. And so that's why when you were saying, you know, you have to give yourself more self-care, it's true, because you have to top yourself up more, because you just are being more depleted. But the reality is, for anybody, if you're giving out any sort of like nurturing, caring energy, or you've whatever responsibilities, whatever it is, in whatever context, and it can be in relationships, it can be with family, it can be at work, and with a child too, is that you can't give the best of your energy if you're not already full, if you don't have something to give, right? And what we have completely missed in our society is the reality that we need to nurture our own, we need to be our own loving mothers, right? At some point.
Yes, exactly.
Because at some point in life, we become adults and we have relationships and they can be nurturing, they can be supportive, but we also have to take, we be at cause and take responsibility for ourselves. And that, but that includes being a loving, kind, compassionate mother to yourself.
Yes.
As opposed to what a lot of us adopt, which is either we ignore the inner parent completely and we go free child, right? So we stay up till 2 a.m. and we're like, fuck you, loving mother. Or...
oh, my God, rebelling against our own inner mother. I hadn't even considered
of course we
that
do that
all the time.
Exactly. That's me, three and three. And, and then there's also the critical parent that's like, you need to be doing this, you need to be doing that. You know, and we have these internal... so... it's actually like, right, you have to decide the kind of like inner loving mother that you want and you need to nurture that.
Yeah.
And we completely ignore that
but
in
we
society.
Don't even, but even in the world of self-development, and there's often talk about the inner child,
but not
I've
inner mother.
Never heard people talking about the inner parent, the inner mother,
yeah,
and healing that or working with that and actually cultivating that. And, you know, I say to mums, I'm like, look... The mistake I think we make as mums is to think that children have needs and it's our responsibility to make sure those needs are met. And that adults, particularly when you become parents, should no longer be thinking about themselves at all. Your needs are just as valid and just as important as your child's. The only difference is it's your responsibility as the parent to look after the needs of your child. And as an adult, it's your responsibility to look after your own needs. And you need to show your child that that's the kind of adult they need to turn into, where they are able
exactly.
to, and they feel empowered to look after their own needs. You don't want to be giving them an example of, oh, when you grow up, you are now... don't matter anymore.
But we do.
You're
that.
Neglected. And kids will look at what you do and not what you say. So that's why I then, if mothers really aren't being motivated to look after themselves, I'll just like, all right, what do you want for your child? Do you want them to grow up neglecting themselves? Or do you want to grow them grow up looking after their own needs? Then you have to lead by example.
It is 100% that, because that's the twisted messages that we're getting. And again, this is one of the ways in which Demeter is in crisis, which is that we just have this idea that in order to be a good carer, a good nurturer, then we have to forget ourselves completely. And in fact, no, it counts for you as well.
Otherwise,
we're all losing ourselves. It's like, if you don't take care of yourself, you're basically putting that burden on others indirectly anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because the burnt out on a short fuse mother, the one that neglects herself, and also is also feeling unloved and unlooked after, you know, not looked after, you're not giving your best version of yourself to your kids or your partner or your friends.
Or life.
And definitely not to yourself.
Yeah.
And you're just going to be miserable. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense. The most popular post I ever put up on Instagram was a saying that says, you can't pour for an empty cup. Look after yourself first. And so it hit such a chord with people. They were just like, oh my God, I need to be reminded of this. And I think women in general, we are hardwired to care for others. That is, you know, and that's a lovely thing.
But it's
to
also
recognize we have to care for ourselves. Oh yeah, completely.
And that's why I think, because it is undervalued, like it's overvalued because we're told to do it all the time. Do it at your own expense. But we're also told, but it's not an achievement.
No, it's a bit of a like...
it's like a bit lame.
Oh, you're just a mum?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, well, that's obvious. It's so obvious that we don't value that.
Yeah.
So then what you're getting at is kind of the other element of crisis, which is that we have absolutely no idea how to actually value the really powerful and kind of energy of mothering energy, which is the source of creativity. It is how it is bringing new life and making it strong. So anywhere where you do that in any aspect of your life, that's about creativity, and that's how powerful it is. It's birthing life.
Do you know,
which is insane.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
that's,
I know, it's amazing
energy.
When I gave birth, and it was no fun at all. When I did not have one of those wonderful, I didn't have one of those wonderful water births where I breathed my baby out at all. But when I gave birth, I remember immediately after being like, oh my God, the way I looked at mothers had just transformed. I said, mothers are the hidden warriors of our society. Because I think in the giving birth process, I think I connected to exactly what you're saying, recognizing how powerful and how strong that mother energy is. And I remember saying, I don't understand how mothers aren't like giving birth isn't just making every woman think she can do anything and going out there and just like taking over the world. And then of course I was like, oh no, I get it now, because it's also exhausting job. I didn't know how time to go out there and take over the world on top of everything else. But the fact that I had always recognized in me that I had always looked at mothers as, you know, and my mother was a stay-at-home mum, and I think I was always a bit embarrassed about saying that to my friends, like, well, yeah, she's just a mum, but she works really hard at home, you know. And I think that we absolutely, and I was very guilty of that, of just recognising the power of it.
I think that's the thing, is we underestimate its power. We forget that energy is the earth mother energy, and it is the source of all kind of life. And in the old, ye olde days of yore, which is a very specific time, they used to celebrate the feminine, because before we kind of like got into it and found out more about it, it used to be like you completely mysticized, you know, to the point of like goddesses, because like fertility was just thought of as like amazingly powerful. And then we've sort of lost that. But the other thing is that, again, we have this sort of mixed messages about it's really important that you do that, but it's also not that like powerful or great. And then as women, you know, I was thinking this about me and you, like I would love to have kids and don't have them, and you just had a kid, so you're or not just, but not that
recently.
Way, right?
Yeah.
So your perception is of kind of like being in that role of mother, whereas from my side, it's also, you know, and we have a mutual friend that doesn't want kids as well. And she will say, you know, everyone thinks that I should want kids and can't even believe that I wouldn't want them. And then it's almost like, well,
I've got plenty of friends like that. Yeah.
And if you don't have kids and you don't want them, then you're thought of as being odd as a woman, because it's supposed to be really natural that you would want it. If you don't have kids and you do want them, then because it's thought of as being really natural and like a kind of thing that women should do and really important, you can feel like you failed in some sense, or like not fully kind of realised as a woman. And at the same time, for everybody, there's this sense of, well, we keep being told that it's the most important kind of function of women, so then there's this,
and yet at the same time it's so dismissed when people become so dismissed. Mothers
they're treated
as such a ignored, I think, in society in terms of having any power. And yet at the same time, it's something that when you don't have it and you want it and you think you're supposed to, it's seen
you
as like this thing that I must, and this will be for so
and this
many
will
people
get me to nirvana,
and this
womanhood.
Will make me happy. This will complete me. And then you have the kids.
Yeah.
Like, luckily, I went into it with my eyes open, and I was just like, okay, I do not think this is going to complete me, nor do I think it's the thing that's going to make me happy. I think it's going to challenge me in many ways and bring a lot of pressure to my relationship. But you know. But I embrace the journey and I love the journey.
Yeah, but I think that what can come out of that is, again, it's this idea of, you know, we can either grasp on really tightly to that role of mother and think, right, I've got to do this. And I really mean that in the sense of, even if you're channeling mother energy, not into your kids or you don't have kids, but in any context, we can overemphasize it, because we might even be anxious about, well, if we don't have that, then what do we have, right?
Yeah.
And there is a lot of anxiety around that. Well, if women stop doing that, then what's going to happen? The world will fall apart. Deep down, we kind of know that, you know, we sort of need it. So people can grasp onto it as, and overemphasize it, like, it's really important, everyone, you know, and I'm going to give up everything for it, or this is the only kind of role that matters, and anyone who doesn't channel that role then is, you know, not doing life right or whatever. Or we go the other way and go, oh, that's a bit pathetic, isn't it? I mean, we've got feminism now. Women are good for other things. And then you get that sort of, well, I want to talk about, you know, women doing this and women doing that. And it's the same around relationships. It's like almost to the point of like, you will get told that you shouldn't value wanting to be in a relationship, you know, that you shouldn't really value a relationship, or that you shouldn't value becoming a mother, because that makes you like weak. The reality is, it's one aspect of life, and it is a beautiful, powerful aspect. And it's also something that can be channeled, not in the context of having a child, but in the context of creativity.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that, you know, without it, you know, it's not that you're not making a contribution. It also doesn't mean that valuing it is bad. It's all about kind of the balance.
It's like, don't overvalue it, and also don't undervalue it. Just see it for what it is, and also recognize that you can be a mother in all sorts of different ways. That mothering energy is anyone, and men just as much as women can give birth to ideas and to visions. And that is what's so amazing about human beings, that we can have with our imagination a vision, and then we bring it down into reality. That is in itself a birthing, which is why I think it probably is also quite a difficult and challenging kind of journey to do that, take a vision, an idea.
And so, like, to loop back like a bit to like relationships, which is partly an Aphrodite thing as well, and around the Demeter thing and wanting to have a family.
Yeah.
I know, you know, I've seen debates going on where, like, if someone, you know, as women, we get asked a lot about relationships, and I'm 35, so it's like, when are you going to have a kid and get married, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's tempting then, because you realise that maybe you feel like it's expected of you or whatever. And also when you get into those things, then it can be overemphasised as if that's the only thing you want to talk about. Uh-huh. And it's tempting to be like, well, I'm really happy and I don't need that, and to sort of like not acknowledge that it's something that you want in life. The point is, there's so much like possibility, and there's so many different energies that acknowledging that there is something that you want that you don't have at the moment doesn't mean that all of your sense of self needs to be annihilated, or that you're not achieving like anything, or that even happiness is impossible. It just means, I really would like that in my life, and I don't, you know, have that right now.
And I imagine as well, it'd be quite a good thing to do if you're not in a relationship, would love to be in a relationship, or if you are not a mother and would love to one day be a mother, is actually to work with those energies and those archetypes.
100%.
And so that you're not feeling an absence of it. Yes. You're actually feeling it's very much alive.
You're channeling it in your life. Ways.
Exactly. Yeah. You're bringing in that energy. And that's what we're big believers of that in Project Love, which is why when people are on the Get Ready for Love course, it's all about cultivating that
instead
love
of rejecting
within, so it's alive in your life.
Right? We can say, right, I don't have it, it's not important, I don't want it. Well, then it's never going to come into your life.
Exactly.
And then you're rejecting all the other possibilities with those energies, you know, because you're just saying, oh, no, it's not important, whatever, I'm happy without that, blah, blah. But equally...
Which is always that the defensiveness is the giveaway that you're not happy about.
Yes, exactly. But it's the same as well, you know, you get mothers, especially new mothers, that are just like, oh, I don't want to have a conversation anymore about my wedding or my child, you know, because suddenly...
that's not all who I am. I know. And I've spoken to mothers and I've said, you know that it's okay to admit that just being a mother and looking after your children isn't enough to fulfill you. And one woman, I said this to her and she welled up and I was like, wow, no one's told her this. She was thinking that she was supposed to be happy purely in the role of mother. That wouldn't be enough for me. Yeah. And I love being a mum.
I must say that for some, there are certain Demeter types who will have a much, much stronger urge towards that. So they will find a deeper... If you lean towards Demeter, you might find... everyone finds satisfaction in it, but you might find a deeper level of like, that's really how you want to spend most of your time.
Whereas old Athena over here is not going to find full fulfillment and just in.
But equally,
I always said it again, just being a mum.
Yeah, exactly. Watch that. But
absolutely.
Equally, the Demeter, like, you know, the Athena types that I lean towards the Athena energy, which is more your career and sort of in the outside world. And then your Demeter types that lean towards that sort of mothering, nurturing energy. You know, the problem is that they all have their wounds and they all have their ways of becoming imbalanced. So even if you are a really strong Demeter type, connecting to the non-Demeter energy is the key to sort of finding more balance within that.
Yeah.
You know, because we've all find our own different ways of like the levels that will work for us, but it is about finding the right balance, you know.
Yeah. And actually now, you know, with you talking about that, it's making me realise that as Athena being predominantly at the moment my kind of goddess type, she's really made friends with Aphrodite by creating Project Love. And she's really made friends with Demeter by kind of taking up the charge of, right, we need to challenge the way that mothers need to look after themselves. And I want to, you know, team up with the likes of Mumhood, who I think are amazing in that space of actually going, mums, health and happiness is absolutely fundamental. And we need to put it right up. You need to be a top priority in your life. Yeah, and we need to help you do that. And so Athena has taken up, you know, and so it's interesting to see how my goddess type has befriended the other goddesses and actually is kind of, it was not all of them perhaps, but you know, one by one she'll get there. But is, you know, really working with them so that they've all got value in my life.
And it's about having those sources of power and inspiration available to you.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you have to, and the whole point of the goddesses is you don't have to do things one way. That's the whole point. That this is like painting, you know, and there's six different colours and you're going to make something beautiful out of it. But it's like if you know that there's six different colours, you can make something more beautiful because you know that you can use the yellow or whatever instead of like not having it available.
Only painting in blue exclusively. Exactly. Yeah, and you've got the whole rainbow spectrum.
Which you might want to do once in a while, but you know, like it's these are available to me now and I know how to harness and use them. And that's the whole point of the goddesses. So that's why I love them, basically.
Oh my God, Helen, thank you so much. I am so pleased we're able to share with everyone about this topic. I find it absolutely fascinating. Every time I talk to you, I kind of learn more about it and find ways that I can, helps me to apply it to my life, but also see just myself in a new light and the sort of energies that are going on in me. So I hope those that are listening have found this really useful too. I'm sure you have. I will put details of how you can get in touch with Helen and find out what she's got on and all her sorts of kind of programs. And you can, of course, come along on the 21st of November and see her in person running a whole workshop on this. You can find out about your goddess type and all the others and how you can use them as a practical tool in your own life. So thank you.
Thank you.
Been listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoy this episode, and if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say best podcast ever. Thank you.